Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. There's a growing momentum for evidence-based approaches at all levels of government. The Office of Management and Budget, OMB, has called upon federal agencies to focus on a broad-based set of activities to better integrate evidence and rigorous evaluation in budget, management, operations, and policy decisions, including making better use of already collected data, promoting the use of high-quality, low-cost evaluations, adopting more evidence-based structures for grant-making programs, building agency evaluation capacity, and developing tools to better communicate what works. This embrace of evidence-based approaches has resulted in important gains in areas ranging from reducing veterans' homelessness to improving educational outcomes and beyond. The National Center for Education Evaluation and Regional Assistance, NCEE, within the U.S. Department of Education, helps policymakers and educators make informed decisions about educational programs and interventions, providing evidence-based information derived from rigorous, relevant research, evaluation, and statistics. What is the What Works Clearinghouse? How does the NCEE ensure the widespread dissemination of its research findings? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Joy Lesnick, Acting Commissioner of the National Center for Education Evaluation and Regional Assistance within the Institute of Education Sciences at the U.S. Department of Education. Joy, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Great to be here. Thanks, Michael.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Kirsten Schroeder. Kirsten, welcome.
Thank you.
So, Joy, let's start out by giving a brief overview of the mission of both the National Center for Education Evaluation and Regional Assistance and the Institute of Education Science, both within the U.S. Department of Education. When were they created and how have their respective missions evolved to date?
Sure. So NCEE, National Center for Education Evaluation and Regional Assistance, is one of four centers in the Institute of Education Sciences, or IES. That's the statistics, research, and evaluation arm of the U.S. Department of Education. IES was established in 2002 through the Education Sciences Reform Act, or ESRA, and it's independent and nonpartisan by design. And our mission is to provide scientific evidence on which to ground education practice and policy, and then share this information in formats that are useful and accessible to educators, parents, policymakers, researchers, and the general public. IES conducts six broad types of work that address school readiness and education from infancy through adulthood. We also look at special populations such as English learners and students with disabilities. So those six broad types of work, first, we provide data that describe how well the United States is educating its students. And IES does that by collecting and analyzing official statistics on the condition of education, including adult education and literacy, by supporting international assessments, and by carrying out the National Assessment of Education Progress, or NAEP. So the second broad type of work is that we conduct surveys and sponsor research projects to understand where education needs improvement and how these improvements might be made. So we have longitudinal surveys, which provide nationally representative data on how students are progressing through school and into the workforce. We have cross-sectional surveys, and they provide a snapshot of how students and the education system are doing at specific points in time. And we fund research that uses these and other data to gain a deeper understanding of the nature and context of needed education improvements. So third, we fund development and rigorous testing of new approaches for improving education outcomes for all students. And we do that by supporting the development of practical solutions for education from the earliest design stages through pilot studies and rigorous testing at scale. And with IES support, researchers are learning what works for improving instruction, student behavior, teacher learning, and school and system organization. The fourth broad type of work is that we conduct large-scale evaluations of federal education programs and policies. And these evaluations address complex issues of national importance, such as the impact of alternative pathways for preparing teachers, teacher and leader evaluation systems, school improvement initiatives, and school choice programs. Fifth, we provide resources to increase the use of data and research in education decision-making. Through the What Works Clearinghouse, we conduct independent reviews of research on what works in education. The Regional Educational Laboratories, or RELs, offer opportunities to learn what works as well as provide coaching, training, and other support for research use across the country and outlying territories. And our statewide longitudinal data system grants enable states to more efficiently track education outcomes and provide useful, timely information to decision makers. And finally, IES supports the advancement of statistics and research through specialized training and developing new methods and measures. IES funds predoctoral and postdoctoral training programs, as well as database training and short courses on cutting-edge topics for working statisticians and researchers. And the Institute's empirical work on new methods and measures ensures continued advances in the accuracy, usefulness, and cost-effectiveness of education data collections and research. So that's the big view of IES, and I can talk more about NCEE, my center, in more detail.
And I'd like to actually touch on that in the operational footprint of the center. Would you tell us how it's organized, the size of your budget, the number of folks who work with you, and maybe give us a sense of the geographical footprint?
Sure. So NCEE is one of four centers in the Institute that do the six broad types of work I just described. There's the National Center for Education Research, NCER, which primarily awards grants to researchers to support rigorous research that address the nation's most pressing education needs from early childhood to adult education. There's the National Center for Special Education Research, NCSER, which sponsors a comprehensive program of special education research designed to expand the knowledge and understanding of infants, toddlers, and children with disabilities. There's the National Center of Education Statistics, NCES, which is the primary federal entity for collecting and analyzing data related to education. And then there's NCEE, the National Center for Education Evaluation and Regional Assistance, which conducts large-scale evaluations, provides research-based technical assistance, and information about that high-quality research to educators and policymakers in a variety of different formats. So there are about 190 staff in IES and about 20 staff in NCEE. These 20 folks do not do all of the research. All of the research in NCEE is done through contracts.
Great. Thank you. Now we'd like to explore your leadership role. What are your specific responsibilities as acting commissioner, and what areas are under your purview?
Well, each center has a commissioner who's responsible for all the staff and activities in that center. NCEE is organized into two divisions. We have an evaluation division and a knowledge utilization division. So in the evaluation division, we're doing those large-scale evaluations of education programs, again, through contracts and practices supported by federal funds. So we have an impact of alternative teacher preparation models evaluation, professional development model evaluations, teacher and leader evaluation systems, school choice, those kinds of programs. In knowledge utilization, we provide resources to increase the use of data and research in decision-making. So in the knowledge utilization division, we have the What Works Clearinghouse, where we provide independent reviews and syntheses of research on what works in education. The Regional Educational Laboratories Network, or the REL Network, which is a key tool for disseminating high-quality information across the U.S. and outlying territories. And it's a key tool for working in partnership with practitioners on how to use data and research in education on a variety of topics of importance. And then we also provide digital and in-person libraries of collections of information. We have ERIC and the National Library of Education in the Knowledge Utilization Division. I'm the Associate Commissioner for the Knowledge Utilization Division and then the Acting Commissioner for the entire center.
So regarding your role and responsibility, what are your top, say, three challenges you face, and how have you sought to address those challenges?
Sure. Well, I'd say the first challenge is communication in all sorts of forms, communicating regularly with folks both inside and outside of the department, communicating with practitioners and policymakers about research findings, and then going beyond communication to engagement as more of a two-way street between researchers and practitioners. I think communication's best when it's clear and gets to the point, but that is hard to do. It's hard to say less when you have lots to say, not to mention that researchers and practitioners and policymakers all sometimes speak different languages. It's also hard to communicate in creative, accessible, and brief ways when you're producing lots of reports, and so the scale is really a challenge for us. For example, last year we released more than one report per week from NCEE on average, and that is a very fast pace. And creativity never follows a template, so we're constantly challenging ourselves and our contractors to try out new ways to engage our audiences. And so some ways we've tried to address this communication challenge is through a real focus on plain language, which doesn't mean less precision, but it means paying close attention to the audience and who will read your information or use your resources and how easy it will be for them to follow along. I really do spend more time reviewing and commenting on the brief news flashes that we send out via email listservs, for example, than I'm providing feedback on the wording of longer reports. I also pay close attention to summary sections, key findings, the website text, and any time we're trying to explain information to our audiences. I'm often commenting in the margins that I don't quite understand what this means, and if I have to try this hard to understand it, our readers really are trying too hard, too. And that's a really a different mindset for researchers to write from this 30,000-foot view to an audience that might not know anything about the topic that they themselves know a lot about. So it's a real challenge. We've also tried out using more infographics to summarize the results of research and to explain how our projects work. Infographics are also hard to do because they work best when the information is creative and non-formulaic. But when they're done well, the information is really powerful. So one example of that is in Florida, where one of our regional educational laboratories had done a research report that was really relevant to the State Department of Education. It had been done in partnership. The report was really well done, but it wasn't until people saw a one-page infographic about the findings that it really gained a lot of interest and attention and started to generate conversation about those research findings and the implications. So a second challenge is being flexible and adapting to meet stakeholder needs. So that's especially challenging in a government environment where contracts have annual plans that are negotiated at the beginning of each year, and then it takes contract modifications to change directions. I heard someone describe changing directions in government by using the metaphor of turning an aircraft carrier rather than a speedboat, and I've certainly felt that challenge from time to time. So we've tried to address this by hearing from the field directly about what their needs are and by trying to be responsive and identify new possibilities within the limitations we have. Twitter actually has been really helpful for us in doing this, especially for hearing directly from people about their wishes or frustrations. So, for example, people have tweeted how they aren't able to easily find the studies that we reviewed in the What Works Clearinghouse database. So we've adapted an existing communications task to produce a quick video about how to use the database search functions, and we'll be incorporating the feedback into a redesigned search tool we're working on now. So we try to do some short-term fixes and then incorporate the feedback into our long-term vision and plans. And finally, a real challenge is having enough staff to lead and coordinate the work of the contractors. So by design, our contractors do the lion's share of the substantive work, but the coordination of a government project can only really happen at the federal level. And our team is excellent and dedicated, but small, and the federal staff core is shrinking. So one way we've approached this challenge is to take a matrix approach to contract management for the What Works Clearinghouse investment. There are four people working across the five different contracts, not 100% of their time, but some portion of it. And instead of having one person per contract, each of the four people on the IES Clearinghouse team is responsible for a different aspect of the work across all five of the contracts. So as a result, we're more coordinated across the different aspects of the Clearinghouse investment. It's a really complicated and complex project, and taking a matrix and team approach to the work has allowed us to put many heads together to solve the challenging problems, and then also to be proactive in planning for future products and procurements. It has also generated lots of ideas for ways we can move the work forward. I'd say we have more ideas than we have staff to oversee them at the moment, so that's a challenge too, but it's a good problem to have.
Well, what has surprised you since taking on your current role?
So when I meet with contractors or people in the field who work on or know about our big investments, like the What Works Clearinghouse or the RELS, I'm always a little bit surprised when they reveal their surprise that I'm thoughtful, aware of scholarly debates, and always trying to improve the product and services that government offers. That may sound a little silly, but it happens more often than I'd expect. I think it's because in my role, I'm constantly trying to strike a balance between the responsibility of government service and what a government research center should do and say, while also being responsive when the guidelines and requirements that we at the center set out at the beginning of our projects need to change to work better for our contractors and stakeholders. So it's impossible to predict where we'll be 5 years down the road when we write a performance work statement for a contract. So we need to figure out how to adapt and respond in thoughtful ways along the way.
So it sounds like your team is, and yourself have really had to bring a lot of skills to bear. So let me ask a little different question. Can you tell us more about your career path? What has brought you to your current leadership role?
Sure. Well, I've had a bit of a spiral career path, I think they call it. And by that, I mean looking at the work of improving education and outcomes for students from a few different perspectives. I started out as a fourth grade teacher. I was a child of teachers, so being a teacher was a natural place for me to start my career. Then I studied education policy in graduate school in Philadelphia because I had special education students in my inclusion class that I thought their needs weren't being met by policymakers. So I thought I might be a policymaker and practitioner who could bridge those gaps together like a young, optimistic 20-year-old might. And then I did research and evaluations myself as part of a research team at a university in Chicago. And after that, I came to work in government, overseeing research contracts, particularly the WhatWorks Clearinghouse contract to start. And now I actually supervise a team of people who oversee research contracts. It gets more governmental along the way. The roles have really been related, I'd say, and I've drawn on experiences from each perspective in a cumulative sense along the way on this spiral path. I also had the opportunity to participate in the Excellence in Government program at the Partnership for Public Service. It was a cohort of 25 other federal staff, all from the Department of Education. That was a few years ago. And that brought another perspective on the leadership portion of my job, and it's been really useful and really helpful. And so I moved up from my position as a project officer for the Clearinghouse in my office to the associate commissioner role for knowledge utilization. And then I was asked to step into the acting commissioner role when that position was vacated, when Ruth Neild was delegated duties of the director for IES.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, let's stay on that leadership. That was your leadership path or your path to leadership. What about your philosophy of leadership? I'd like to get a sense of what are the characteristics to you of an effective leader? And perhaps you could outline key leadership principles and illustrate how you've applied those principles.
Sure. First, for me, leadership is really all about the people. And by that, I mean empathy and respect for people and for their perspectives, their passions, their frustration, and their investment in the work they're doing as part of the team. I think that good leaders really recognize the emotional side of how people are connected to their work and support them in the decisions that they're empowered to make. I think that effective leaders are really authentic. Maybe the best compliment I received when I first became associate commissioner 2 years ago, a colleague said that what she appreciated the most about me in that new role was that I continued to be myself rather than change to be something I thought the role required. I think about that often when I'm feeling a bit out of my league or if my style is unlike my peers. I think leadership is really behavior, not position, and we can all lead from where we are and as who we are. I think a second principle to move forward and improve, everyone needs to know what to do and what their role is in reaching the shared goal. So for me, as a leader, it's important to be clear and direct and to address problems head on and then to celebrate our successes, too. I think an effective leader supports and sometimes nudges staff to be leaders themselves from wherever they are. And third, I'd say an effective leader is constantly looking for ways to learn, to grow, and to improve. I think there's always room for creativity and growth, and we're often all really learning together, especially when we're inventing something new. Sometimes we make mistakes, and we learn from them, and we grow. You asked for three, but I'll add one more point that's a favorite quote of mine that I think of often in different situations. The quote goes something like, "We don't see things the way they are. We see things the way we are." And recognizing where people are is essential, I think, when working together as a team toward a shared goal.
What is the mission of the What Works Clearinghouse? We will ask Joy Lesnick, Acting Commissioner of the National Center for Education Evaluation and Regional Assistance within the U.S. Department of Education, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.